Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favourite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah!
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon! That's right, your favourite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. Wow. For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made. You're listening to the Oz TV podcast, only on the Oz Network.
Whoopity-doo! It's 24, season 6. We're almost getting to the point where we say that with enthusiasm, because we're this close to being over. We're up to episode number 22 of 24, and season 6, as I said, which aired on May the 14th, 2007, that famous date where...
Stuff happened.
Like episode 22 of season 6 of 24.
Sorry, I Why came unprepared.
I can flip my calendar here.
The Constitutional Court of South Korea overturns the impeachment of President Roh Moo-hyun in 2004. Skylab, the United States' first space station, is launched in that year that was 1973. And approximately 7,100 brewery workers in Milwaukee perform a walkout marking the start of the 1953 Milwaukee brewery strike in 1953. Oh, and Israel was declared to be an independent state. That probably was the key factor that happened, because nothing's ever gone wrong with that in the history that's ever happened since then.
I'm going to add to that. This was also the day in 2007 where writers Howard Gordon, Evan Katz, and director Brian Spicer should have been fired by the Fox Network for producing this garbage.
And it's Mark Zuckerberg's birthday. Sorry. correlated.
Mark Zuckerberg could have done a better job with this episode. I am not a fan, which we will get into shortly. My name is Colin, and I can tell from the way you were in bed, something's wrong.
Fucking hell. There's like one quote in this movie, and you take it. My name is Ben, and finally we're done.
That was going to be my closing quote.
Oh, keep it quiet. There we go.
Yeah, I am not a fan of this episode. I think that there's some potential in here to make entertainment, but if you were to make a list of the worst written scripts in 24 history, where the actors themselves can't even get paid to deliver any lines in a convincing fashion, this would be it. Like, this is horrible, horrible, horrible. Half of my notes on this are just how bad the dialogue is. And I couldn't care less about the stories, because as we kind of said over the last couple weeks, you've now just introduced a whole bunch of new stories that it's too late in the game to care about, especially when you haven't cared about the much bigger storylines that came before this. And everything we're seeing is just repeat. It's a repeat of, you know, the Alexis Drazen stuff with Michael Shanks and Lisa stuff. And then it's a repeat of the Cypress recording with, it all comes down to this tiny little thing that we need to get. There's just nothing really like in this episode.
I just think the last part of this season is just the writers just don't care. They just, I'm not even joking. I legitimately think that they've gone, we're fucked the goose of this season. They wanted this to be done with, just like the fans. So they're going, okay, we'll do this. Because, like, I swear even the actors at this point are not even trying. Like, no, everyone is bored at this point in this season. I will be honest. This episode and next episode, I barely paid attention to. And I know what happens in them. But you don't really need to, because it's just like, okay, sexy, you know, Chinese mercenary and that skin. And this might be the worst fight scene in 24 history in this episode.
Really? That's one of the things I liked about it.
It's terrible. The choreography, everything about it is so bad. I mean, you know it's bad when you are legitimately hoping that the terrorists shoot one of the good guys when they're going like, shut her up. I'm like, yes, shut her up. Shoot her in the head. It's just nothing is just entertaining about this. It just, you are longing for this season to be over at this point, because you've also now got to deal with fucking Josh being like, and it's not even just that I don't like this guy. Like, he hasn't, him and this Bauer family storyline, the outside of Jack, they haven't earned they're right for us to care about. This is the issue. Yeah. We do not care about Philip Bauer. We don't care about Josh Bauer. Why do we care about Josh being traded and being taken by Ricky Schroeder? If anything, I'm just like, oh my God, really? I don't care. Just shoot him. Is Ricky Schroeder blind yet? It's just so just, I'm just over it. I'm just like, get on with it. Come on. Get me to the finale already.
That's very much in line with what I was thinking watching this, is that we've gone from, we barely cared about Kim, a major character being in peril, to we could not care less about Josh, a character that, forget the issues with the writing of the character, the performance of the character, or any of that. It is an insignificant character that has appeared a handful of times throughout the season, as is Philip, an insignificant character that has appeared a handful of times throughout the season, and has essentially been forced on the audience because you give them the last name Bauer. We didn't care when it was important characters put in this exact same situation. We're not going to care now. And that's not even a knock against, you know, the character of Josh or the performance by Evan Ellison or anything like that. It's just, this is a huge step down from what you've already done before. And again, it's, Like we're saying, it's just recycling things we've had before. Now we got another teenage Bauer in peril here.
But it's a perfect comparison to Kim because, yeah, like people can roll and groan and all that sort of stuff about Kim. But, I mean, Kim earned that. Kim warranted that. We had a whole season of Kim. And, like, within the first episode, when you meet Kim Bauer, you've got to feel sympathetic towards Jack and Terry because they kind of sell that to you straight away. And no matter whether you like Kim or not, Kim earns your respect and earns your, you know, you roll your eyes, oh, there's a cougar, yes, there's that guy from Entourage, oh my God. But like at the end of the day, we've had a season and a half of it where we're getting annoyed because she's in peril. It's a trope, not that, oh, who is this person? Why do I care about them? So give me Kim and the cougar and Entourage and freaking the babysitter club. Give me all of that 100 times over and more. Because compared to this crap, and again, this Josh, like, surely tell me you were sort of coming on board that he might be the worst character in 24 history. Come on.
Who?
Josh.
Oh, Josh. I didn't have to come around. I hated Josh coming into this season.
Awful.
And again, it's a character that the problem is you have forced him on the audience. And you force him on the audience, like you said, without him earning the right to be forced on the audience. The same thing could be said for Philip as a villain. The same thing could be said for Marilyn as a whatever you want to call it. And just call simply it. Saying,
yes.
Is she a love story? Is she a love interest? You know, is she an in-law? What is she? We don't know. But you look at the amount of time and effort they put into making you care about Paul Raines 2 seasons ago, who probably had the same amount of episodes. That's just how you do a better job of character. They just did a poor job by these characters.
And the thing, yeah, you're right. But like what they do well with Paul, as Paul, in hindsight, is maybe an annoying character, but they build it up more and you've got the Audrey connection. I mean, we get that chemistry and everything with Jack and Audrey in the prequel and the first episode enough alone to know that this is a big deal. And then you've got Kim Raver giving a great performance around the again, I'm sorry to the actress who plays Marilyn. I really am. But, like, you're a hysterical pain in the ass that's not making me care about it. Shut up. Like, seriously, if that's what Audrey was doing a couple of seasons ago, I'm ranting a lot already, but it makes me angry. Just get this over with. Can we? I don't even like season 7 either, but can we go there already?
Well, really, the first third of this episode is all one sequence. We'll just cover that right now. We open up. With them covering up some guy's dead body. Now, this is the conspiracy that is yet to be unraveled. How is Milo no longer there? Because it's clearly not Eric Balfour.
Told you. It is a very poor
substitute. although they do have a couple mentions of him throughout this episode. And then this is exactly what you're talking about. Marilyn's panicking. It's just like it grates on my nerves. This is like the My Baby lady from Spider-Man. And I was like, oh, no.
I love that
and
woman.
And again, she's panicking over somebody that the audience doesn't care about yet. And I love this line where Nadia, just leave her alone. I'm like, yes, please leave her alone. This is what the audience is saying. Writers, just leave Marilyn alone. We don't need it. There's two very cheesy things done this episode. I feel like Brian Spicer directed this episode trying to get fired or something because they throw in this staticky screens because CTU has been shut down. We've been invaded. So the screens are all static, but then there is a logo that is superimposed over top of the static. Is there any explanation for this? Who decided to watermark the static screen? And it's on all of them. Yeah, so Jack comes up with a plan. Of course, he has a plan. I love what Jack's talking. Melee, what I want you to do is I want you to move to the front of the group and everything. And he's talking to Nadia. Nadia, okay, so I need you to, I'm going to take out a guard and that's going to be your signal to take out the. And then Chloe just comes up. What are you guys talking about?
I don't know why she reminds you of Jamie. I feel that's like Jamie would do. Like, you know, what are you guys doing?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Guys, I know you're trying to be discreet, but can I be in it?
I want to punch people too.
I hate how easy and quick this whole takedown of the terrorists is, but I did like the fight scene. I even noted I liked the fight scene. I mean, Jack choking this guy out and then snapping his neck, that's great. And then Nadia fighting with the gun. I mean, it looked real. It's one of the few things in this episode where I think feel like the actors at least are putting effort into it, especially the Nadia fighting over the gun with this guy. And then Ricky Schroeder comes at the last second and shoots somebody and saves the day. I feel that was going to rub you the wrong way there, set you off or something. But after all this comes down, you know, they say, Jack's like, okay, so what we need to do is this, this, and this. And it's like, Jack, you do realize you're still under arrest. This is reminding the audience he shouldn't be here. And then this is the one mention about who's dead or whatever. Yes, one's dead, Milo Pressman. And then you get, oh, are you all right? Will you be all right? This is Star Qui-Gon is me. Will you be all right?
More Shmi references in 2024.
So Jack and Mike are going to go after Josh here. And this is another thing. Like, there is no effort into, you know, you have to suspend all disbelief for the season. We already saw how quickly they were able to make it here. But you actually have a count now. It is 6 minutes for them to walk in the tunnels underneath CTU to get to wherever Chang's hiding out. Like, how many buildings are there in plain sight? This would be, what, two blocks away, if that?
Yeah.
It probably would. You probably could only get a block and a half in you know, 6 minutes or whatever it would take dragging
traffic,
you know, around everything. Then all the traffic in the sewers, yeah. And then we get the phone call inside Chang's hideout. Hands it off to Josh. He says he's going to take him away from this ungrateful country. This is the problem with Philip. Like, they, even at the end of the season, there is no effort made to explain what Philip's motives are. We went from, I'm doing this because I'm a patriot, to let's get you out of this ungrateful country and I'm going to cut deals with all the countries that stand for the exact opposite of whatever the American dream is supposed to be. And I love John. I don't want to be with him.
Shut up. Take him to China.
And the worst part of this, and this is, again, I'm going to chalk this up to bad direction and not knocking the actor, Evan Ellison or whatever, but Josh saying, I don't want to do this. And then all of a sudden, Josh is booking it with these terrorists up to the roof. No, I don't want to go. And then, come on, let's go. And he's running like Usain Bolt up these stairs. Like, there's no consistency with Josh's character. They get to the roof and, you know, we get, Chang with a gun just doesn't fit. Like, this is what we talked about last week. Like, this is a politician, you know, he's a diplomat. Having him with a gun, it just doesn't seem right. Jack's up there. It's like, where's Josh? And we have Josh hanging like an idiot from the underneath this steel grating.
He's the reason why, like, Chang doesn't get killed. Help me. It's like, fucking just leave him, Jack. You've got him. Like, you've got Chang, you idiot. Audrey dies because of Jack, right here. I'm telling you now. Spoiler alert, we're three seasons away from this happening, but I'm telling you now, Jack's fault. Josh's fault.
Everything's Josh's fault from this point on. Legacy is Josh's fault. You really want to know whose fault it was? Josh's fault.
AIDS. Josh's fault. Just saying. I think of the worst things happen in history. AIDS.
Star Wars Episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, Josh's fault.
The emoji movie. Cats. Zardoz.
Everything offensive Noah has said in this podcast, Josh's fault.
Max Dawson.
Josh's fault.
The Oz Network.
it all comes down to you, Josh. Sorry. Anyway, so we get the capture of Chang here or whatever. The line, though, where Jack is talking to Josh and him trying to be sympathetic to Josh. Like, I don't know. This is just a thing with the character just rubs you the wrong way, because we loved Jack being sympathetic towards the brother of you know, whatever his name, Mark, a couple of weeks ago. And next week, you're probably going to hate me, but I like the stuff we get with Mike and Josh next week.
Oh, fuck. But
I think that even Kiefer just... Kiefer doesn't even care here. Did he say why he wanted you? No, I like that he's like, no, he didn't say anything. He just said that I was his legacy and he was going to take me to China. And and then I love the...
Really,
I don't even remember who
really
was
is his fault. I keep mentioning legacy in the...
There
episode.
We go, legacy,
really,
yeah.
It really is his fault. Sorry.
And this one I don't understand. I don't remember who said it, but who says it to Jack. I think it is Ricky Schroeder here, where it says, your father's involved with the Chinese? Why? Again, said every viewer ever. Ricky Schroeder is speaking for us, asking for an explanation for this that we're never going to get. The opening sequence has some good action moments here, but then there's so many things like Josh dangling that just, it just set, make me want to lash out. What is that line from the Santa Claus again?
It makes me want to lash out. Where did you hear that? From Neil. Yeah. He listens to me. Yeah. And then he charges you for it.
Yeah. I can't even deal with this.
This is just so, like, it's just lazy. It's just, all of this just feels like, this is a big, big gripe around this. This is the end of a season. There should be stakes that are high. We should be worried. Like, there should be tension. And all seasons, there is tension and high stakes and high drama. Even from memory, next season, as much as I dislike season 7, and I think the last four episodes of season 7 are among the worst of this show's history, there is at least a level of tension there, which you feel there are high stakes with. This, what are we even concerned about? Like, Josh has been kidnapped, an unlikable character. Jack's dad is back. Somebody who we barely even remember was in the show, and we've barely had time to digest of why he's a thing and what is even his plan. A bunch of Chinese mercenaries who all of a sudden now want to keep this chip from whatever. And like, I feel that even the way, like, it almost feels like they ran out of money in the first four episodes, because these are all very like dark sets. They're very enclosed rooms. And I know in a couple of weeks we're going to get like all the big oil tanker set. Here's all the budget for the end of the season. But like at the same time, it's like, well, what are we worried about here? Even when you've got, I know I'm jumping a bit here, but even when you've got Suvorov on the phone going, yes, we will push your men over on the border. Like, it's not like he's saying we're going to start World War III. He's literally like, we will move our troops near yours. Oh, no, don't do that, Russia. Ah, like, I mean, it's just, I feel there's no stakes here. Like, what are we concerned about? I don't get it. And I'm sorry. I think this action scene at CTU is woeful. I think, like, it's just, it's akin to a bunch of 8-year-olds fighting on the playground. Even Kiefer's putting in a shit effort here with this sexy Chinese mercenary. Even the chokeout just looks weak to me. Nadia knocking out 3 guys. And this is no disrespect to Marissa Nichols or, like, any female. She just looks weak the way she's doing it. Like, she's just like, like, and but I even think Kiefer's
doing... Oh, the fight over the gun didn't look weak.
I disagree. I think even Kiefer's looking weak. I just think it just looks cheap. Like, nobody bothered to show up with any effort on the set this day. And it just, and then Mike showing up. But then, like, this is my problem with the Milo death. It's like, this guy has been in, what, every episode this season. Him and Nadia have had this, like, back and forth connection. Can we imagine back in season 2 if Tony gets shot in the head? He would have survived because he got shot in the neck. But, in all seriousness, Tony, similar thing happens in season 2, dead. Do you think Michelle's just going to be like, no, I'm not okay. Oh, well, back to work. Like, no. Like, I mean.
Well. Big difference, though. I mean, we've yet to really even see a proper connection between Nadia and Milo.
I know, but, like, at the same time, like, it's like, well, what is the point of their little, like, thing? Because it's just like, Nadia just literally just like, no, I'm not okay. Next week, oh, who's that? His brother. Okay. And then it's just like, cool, moving on. Like, I mean, like, it's the cheapest, most pointless death. And that's my biggest problem with last week, why I just am not, like, I get annoyed with it. Because, again, you're going to go for a big moment like that. You need to have some sort of, like, something afterwards. Even freaking Jamie in season 1, when her mum came in, had more of an emotional impact. And we had less time to know Jamie than we did with Milo. So that's my point why, like, I get annoyed about this. This is crap. Fucking Josh. Help me! Help me! No. Uncle Jack! Help me!
This is where I feel nauseous.
I just want Jake to turn around and Jack go, seriously, do you want me to shoot him? It's like, no, I better save him. You run away that way. I'll rescue him. I'll get you in, like, season 9. Like, it's so annoying.
There's like tears in Ben's eyes right now.
Like, I'm all for Mo. Like, last season, we loved it when, like, you had Henderson and, like, it made our top five. And the cutting, like, the arm and, like, you've got, it's the Spider-Man situation. What are you going to do? Save the innocent children or save MJ? And, like, you got to get away. Like, I'm all for that moment. I'm all for a choice. Sophie's choice. But not some annoying, can help me, Uncle Jack, help me. Like, no, don't help him. Just let him fall.
Yeah.
So bad. I am remembering this in season 9 when Audrey is killed by this man. It's your fucking fault, you little shit. Fuck you.
I hate to do this to you, but I'm going to save the White House stuff for last. So we're going to talk more Marilyn here, more Josh.
I'm going to be sick.
First of all, we get Nadia's replacement showing up here, which is it just me or does this guy look like Bo Bridges? Like, he looks like a Bridges brother, yeah. Like Jeff Bo Bridges.
That actually makes sense that you said that because I'm looking at this guy going, this guy's somebody. I know he is. Who is this guy? I think this is all we get of him. I don't even think he's in the finale.
We don't see him
he?
After this.
Yeah. Who is this guy?
It's pointless because the way he comes in, like, it's I'm taking charge of everything. But, like, we always see these characters and they're always, you know, holding people down. But he kind of makes the right calls here, at least. He arrives at, like, 3 a.m. And, of course, he's criticizing their security and everything. And Naughty's like, well, it is 3 a.m., you know? like, that doesn't give any type of excuse for this. I think this also poses a bit of a problem when you're looking back after the fact and last few episodes. Because we knew they were on their way here before Cheng's men came into CTU. And, you know, they were rounding everybody up. You know, they were trying to get Josh out of there and everything, but they were rounding people up and putting them in separate rooms. These guys Division would have been here to save the day, even if Mike hadn't come in and Jack and Nadia hadn't choked a couple guys out. So it seems like such a small thing, but that actually kind of bothers me because I'm like, what was the point of we need only Jack and only Nadia to save the day here because Division reinforcements are coming 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
So, and what was Cheng's plan? Like, these people would have shown up and then what? And then we have this.
Sorry to jump in, but I'm so confused around this whole, like, China invade CTU thing, because again, whether these guys are connected to China, this is still an international incident. This is just completely glossed over. They have literally invaded a government agency of the United States.
Although they have American accents. Is that part, like, that's never explained, but is that what, did Cheng specifically hire Americans to actually do this?
Well, I mean, I don't know, but does the White House even mention that CTU was attacked? Because, like, the 400 times they've been attacked in previous seasons, it's like, shut them down. Let's get Homeland Security. I swear, like, they don't even mention it to the White House. At what point does House go, like, hey, you guys have just invaded? No, we weren't. What are you talking about? Don't know what you're talking about. No, everything's fine. Situation normal. How are you?
We have a small reactor leak here. Give us a few minutes to lock it down. Large leak, very dangerous.
Boring conversation anyway. Look, we got company.
No, you're right, because I mean, I'm looking at all my White House notes here and I don't even think it's addressed. They've got their own problems. This is one of the things where it's like an adult version of Josh saying, I wish I'd never been born. Is Nadia blaming herself for this? Oh, this was all my fault. Which I like the scene of Morris empathizing with her and saying, trust me, I've been there, you know. people screw up, it happens, I did much worse things. But it's the idea that Nadia is blaming herself. There are tunnels that existed underneath CTU that are as easy to get into as just pushing up a floor vent. None of this could she blame herself for. Like, and I get you got these people coming in saying, like, oh, there are problems here at CTU. She wasn't even in charge up until a couple hours ago. Like, this is like self-pity. That, again, it rubs me the wrong way. It's just, and this is tying it all the way back to Josh with, I wish I'd never been born. This is Nadia's, I wish I'd never been born. I don't get it. But the scene with Morris and Nadia is one of the highlights of this episode, at least. We get Jack calling up Marilyn. Sorry.
Let it out. Get it out.
Rush of nausea that came over me. Oh. Mike taking this whole exchange at the end of the episode here. The one thing I will say that's good about this is that Jack being caught off guard and the fact that the audience is kind of, because this is actually the cliffhanger, even though it's a pretty poor cliffhanger, is where, you know, everything's going to be okay. And then all of a sudden, Uncle Jack, what are they doing with me? Where are they taking me? And all of a sudden, hey, what's Mike doing taking that kid? Because obviously the order's been given. We're going to make this exchange with Philip or whatever without Jack. It caught me off guard. Not good enough for it to be a cliffhanger or whatever. But I like that this happened off camera. Now, it makes no sense because when this order is given, there's not even a commercial break. There's not even like another scene in between. It's like, okay, this is what we're going to do. And the next thing you know, Mike's literally walking in a frame 30 seconds later and he's been given this whole plan and taking him out. But as far as like, sometimes you have to spend disbelief and you can catch the audio off guard, audio off guard. You caught the audio off guard,
caught the audience off guard.
Yep. it still kind of works, but it's not a great cliffhanger.
I don't even know. I don't want Kiefer laying on the ground being pinned down by a bunch of people going, Josh! Like, it's just, oh, Kiefer, you're better than that. Kiefer, you're so much better than that. And fucking Ellingson, whatever his name is. Oh, my God. Like, yeah, I agree with you to a point where it does take you a little bit off guard. But even then, like, Ricky Schroeder beating Jack. Come with me, Josh. Like, it's just... Yeah. Is this just not the most hypocritical bullshit when they always go off against Jack for doing things like this? Yet as soon as something goes wrong, they go ahead and do it with an instant like that. Like, I mean, it's just all hypocritical.
But is it not like is it not the right call? Like, technically, it's the right call for them to try to make this exchange. It's the same thing they did with the Audrey thing, everything.
Yeah, it is 100% the right call, but so does everything Jack say is the right call, but they don't listen to Jack. But, I mean, we literally get a line next week from Peter McNichol when it's just kind of like, oh, well, Jack's been right all the time. It's like, well, you're not wrong there. Like, I swear that's a nod to the whole meme about, you know, if everybody listened to Jack, the show would be called 12. But it's just, and then even like, I feel it's more next week, but like, I talk about people being bored. Morris and Chloe, what are they doing? They're just like, oh yeah, I feel
their drama's over with.
They're just like zombies at the moment. And then next week, Chloe collapses.
There might be a reason Chloe's a zombie, though. Maybe that's intentional.
Don't even get me started on just cheap things that you just throw in for the sake of, what are we going to do with Chloe? I don't know. Well, she's pregnant. Okay. Like,
it is morning. Morning sickness is a thing.
They've got a dartboard this season. They're bored. Right, fucking boom. Chloe pregnant. Oh, okay, sure. Well, she can collapse this week, I guess.
It landed on Milo dead. Oh, but you can't argue with the dartboard, so yeah. I guess we're going to have to do it.
The dartboard says, oh. I really don't have much to add because I'm rolling my eyes at all of this crap. It's you are literally on autopilot watching this show right now where I know the finale is a decent finale. I know I'm at least at least this season we'll have a finale where I can at least go, okay, the finale was good. There were four episodes at the beginning that were good, two in the middle that were good. Next season, I am so checked out with just the bullshit that we're getting that I am nothing save season 7 at this point. So at least we're on the final disc and we're only 2 weeks away from the finale at least.
Which, speaking on that, I thought that considering they've had a lot of commentaries and everything throughout the season, the final disc, last four episodes, we would have something. No commentaries, nothing. It is featureless. Exactly. They gave up even on commentaries. Not even for your finale. Can you produce? You finally get a good episode near the end. Maybe even two good episodes.
It is literally like I can't make fun of Toronto because you at least make the playoffs. It's like, In a couple of months' time, when Calgary and Anaheim have got like their last four home games and we're well out and truly out of playoff contention, you got half a crowd, they're giving away. Like, I went to Calgary's last ever game of like the 2016 season. They hadn't made the playoffs. It was a final game. They were giving you like free shit everywhere you went. Free. The crowds didn't care. You could almost sit wherever you wanted to. Like, it was free for all. It's the last day of school. You're like, I'm checked out. I don't need to do work. So this is what this is. Everyone's just like, fuck it. This season's shit. We've already moved on. We're going to be right at strike in a couple of weeks. So we're not coming back for 2 years. Off we go. Everyone's checked out.
So one thing that I have a question on, which I don't even remember where this fits in the episode where we get Philip talking about the circuit board. And it doesn't come out just that Philip is in need. He can repair the circuit board. So he has leveraged himself. He's come up with this master plan from the beginning that he will repair a circuit board that he could have had no knowledge would it be in need of repair. And that's what your final act of this series is based around. It's not even just, I've got the circuit board. Why feel the need to throw in something that actually complicates the logic by saying, it's all because you need me to repair it? Nobody knew this would need repair.
Well, no one knew this existed. Like, this is a thing. This is where, like, you can tell there was no plan behind this because, all you needed, like, back when the bombs were still in play, is you needed a line, like a throwaway line where, like, Philip or Graham or somebody goes, oh, it's much more than a nuclear bomb, but I can't tell you. Like you just need something. And if you've not planned this far ahead, I get why you can't do that. But this is where, as you're pointing out there, none of this makes sense. Because again, we didn't know this chip existed until they decided to introduce it. It somehow holds all keys to Russian defense because the Russians are that dumb, apparently. Then all of a sudden, the Chinese really want it because, I mean, can we also just put out, we have not touched on this, China and Russia are allies in real life. Yeah. They don't hate each other. They are allies.
Well, like, but it's probably one of these situations, though, where you keep your friends close, your enemies closer. I don't think they're necessarily allies to the point where they want to share their technology.
True, but like at the same time, this would be like the UK and the United States. They're good bedfellows, but I'm sure deep down they don't want to share each other's like tea and hot dogs. Like, but I mean, like, you never see, like, half the reason why America doesn't want to, like, piss off, like, Russia with, like, the Ukraine situation is because they know China would get involved and, like, America might be America, but they're going to lose if Russia and China combine. Like, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, this is where, again, I need to point that out. But, like, it's just, what are we, again, going back to my high, what are the stakes here at circuit board? It's one.
That's the problem.
But this is the thing. Can we also touch the elephant? So they've got one of these and they give it over to the Chinese. All right, even if they destroy that, weren't there other suitcase nukes? What if, like, one of these things didn't get destroyed in one of the explosions and some little kid finds it in San Francisco? What if those people who got the drone found this and, like, Johnny Come Lately fireman, who is, like, getting radiation poisoning, is about to die, is like, fuck you, US government, for not protecting me. I'm selling this to Mexico and we're going to bomb America, sell it to the Mexicans and the Mexicans are going to invade Russia. I don't know, Colin. I'm getting angry at this still. none of this makes sense. And what does Graham Bauer have to do with anything? What is the deal with Graham Bauer? Jerry Seinfeld should be in this episode.
He should commentate it. They could have got him on for the final four
what
commentaries.
What is the deal with this episode? I don't
Jerry
understand.
Seinfeld and Shannon Doherty doing the finale commentary.
Look, honestly, at this point, I'm not opposed. I would rather Shannon Doherty play Mike Doyle than Ricky Schroeder. She would do a better job. And seriously, thoughts with Shannon Doherty. She's dying, apparently. So, yeah.
Is she?
She's got, like, some really bad cancer. So
I know she's had cancer for years or something like that.
But I think it's come back and it's, like, pretty bad. So, yeah.
My fandom of Shannon Doherty only runs 24 deep. I don't think there's anything else.
I stopped watching Charm once she got kicked off. Apparently, I like her a lot more than I thought. I've always admired her, like how people call her a bitch. I think she's just cool. She just says it how it is. I love her being a diva. I've seen her in person. I was at a Comic-Con and I was like, there she is.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you talked about that, the Charm Comic-Con. So the White House stuff. By the way, they remember Karen exists. She walks past.
There she is. Hi, Karen.
And of course, the first thing question she has is, where's Tom Lennox? He's on a field assignment. Because now even the characters on the show are questioning. He's not a field agent, you know.
Yeah.
And this is where Daniels has to explain to her everything that's happened in the last couple episodes where they forgot that she was part of their cast. So this is where all the worst dialogue in this episode is. Lisa Miller, a spy for the Russians? this is now all the characters questioning everything that's happened in this show. And then you get Powers Booth, who even Powers Booth cannot make anything out of the line, needless to say, I am ashamed. That is a line in this episode. Which, again, right now is the audience saying, so are we, that we're still watching on episode 22. And we get Lennox looking as bored as any man has ever looked, watching sex between two very attractive people.
Which I do love it when they actually finally finish, which apparently takes about 50 minutes, according to 24 Wiki.
Yeah, I thought it was like at the end of the last episode, which even then that would have been like a 30-minute session that Bishop and Logan and Lisa are on right
that
now.
Lasted like 5 minutes. But like,
that was done during the first commercial.
I love Linux, and finally we're done. Or finally we're done.
But like his expression, like I'm gonna officially put him up as best actor this season because we've had at least one bad Powers Booth line in this, and Peter McNichol makes even this great, where he's like, ah. Oh, finally, we're done.
He's all flustered, zips his pants up. Oh, finally, we're done.
Now, the whole sting here is that I guess they got a camera on her purse or something like that, and they want to tag him as he's reading her PDA, which, again, like, these are so low stakes because they're not even trying to have this make sense. Like, okay, you're leaking information to the Russians, but we thought China was the threat, but we thought Philip Bauer was the threat, but I guess the Russians, they're trying to set up everything that's going to happen at the end of this episode to make the Russians more menacing than they are. But like, this should not be top priority even right now for the White House. Yeah. Because as we're going to see, it is much easier to just go in there and say, we already knew what you did. We didn't need this evidence in the first place. So everything that's going to happen here with Lisa, they do away with even in their own script at the end of this episode. Bishop's just wondering why she looks so bored. He's like, I'm Michael Shanks, baby. Have you looked at me?
Look at this chest.
I know I'm better than this. Why you look so bored?
Canadian. So are you.
Yeah, it was August 15th that we started. It's August 16th now. That should tell you how excited you should look right now, Lisa. she decides to excuse herself, and he's going through her purse, and then he immediately puts the PDA back so they don't get the information they want. And this is where he has that line, I can tell from the way you were in bed that something's wrong. Like, does it usually go for an hour and a half and not 55 minutes? Like, what's the difference here? I think she had some stamina there, Bishop.
But didn't they have sex like 2 hours ago, and they only went for like 20 minutes then?
I mean, yeah, she's doubled her endurance on only 2 hours later. Like, if anything, maybe he's saying, I know you're not that good, Lisa. Okay. We've been doing it long enough that you don't last that long. This is where he basically turns on her and she just gives it up right away. And again, it's very similar to the whole Alexis Drazen and whatever White House staffer or Palmer staffer they had in season one. Because she can't stick it out. She blows up at him. She doesn't stab him, though. She starts swinging her arms. This is because you're a spy for the Russians. Which I do like the way that this scene plays out. I do like the performance there of her basically just going off on this guy. And then he starts choking her out, which is a pretty violent scene. But this is where something more idiotic than a watermark over top of static on a television screen happens. You hear the sound of them breaking in the door. And then you see, as these guards come in, the door frame itself broken apart, but there are no doors there. Then they just broke open the door frame of an open door. Like, this is like Secret Service guys who are so, you know, amped up right now. Like, I just got to destroy something and kick in the door frame, even though the door is wide open. Like, I rewound this 3 times. If you look at it right now, you see what I'm talking about.
Try and watch this.
Literally no doors there, but they're kicking the door frames. The frame itself is swinging. Makes no sense whatsoever. Looks ridiculous. They take him into custody. There's a scene here with Daniels being told that Lisa was choked and that she lost consciousness. I like that he kind of goes, you see that, right?
It's like a completely open door.
Exactly. But I'm still gonna kick it because I'm angry.
Angry.
You don't choke Canadian women. Okay.
He's a big fan of 24. This episode sucks.
I don't care how good you are shirtless. You know how to do this. Yeah, that was Brad Turner. Who is it? Brian Spicer. That was Brian Spicer. I just want you to kick the door because I'm done with this show. But yeah, Daniels questioning Lennox is like, how could you let this happen? I told you to watch her. It's like, and I was watching and watching and watching and watching. And he just says, it happened very quickly, sir. There's nothing we could have done.
By the way, Lisa's dead.
Yeah. Is she actually dead? Did they say that she dies after this?
I don't think you ever hear anything more about her again. Forget she ever existed, just like Milo and everybody else this season.
They do say she's stable, I think, at some point. Oh, we have a pulse. It's faint, but it's there. Which, I mean, he's choking. I don't know how quickly you could barely have a pulse after choking for like, I don't know, 5-10 seconds. Because again, it does happen very quickly. We get, of course, sponsorship, Cisco teleconference. Got to have the big, maybe that's where the logo is over top of the static. And if you lose reception, Cisco teleconference is still there. So he calls up Suvorov.
He's on three screens. Why is he on three screens? And he's just in the middle. Oh, no, I need you to get the right-hand side and the left-hand side of my Russian room on your screen. Why does he need all three screens? Why? I want just wide shot on room. We put lots of money in room. American be impressed with size of Russian room.
That's just Cisco teleconference saying, hey, we want our product showcased to the fullest extent of what it's capable of here. But this whole scheme where they want to, and again, this is where everything in this episode just becomes pointless, because the sting operation with Bishop is pointless, as we're going to find out later on. Now even this, we're going to lie to the Russian president. Don't worry, we definitely got the circuit board and it's damaged, so we can't actually return it to you. Okay, so you can send me some proof that it was damaged, right? Yeah, absolutely. I'll get right on that.
Get some piece of paper. Here it is. Look at it. It's destroyed. Oh, there you go.
This is, he just pulls his phone out of his pocket. Here it is. Yeah, that's totally destroyed. It's just smashing with his fist. Now we get the phone call from Philip, and he's saying he's going to turn the circuit board, or he's do the exchange for the circuit board, which sets up next week. We have all this debate about him being a sociopath. Now this comes, I don't know, every single person, he's a sociopath. You're right, he is a sociopath. But should we deal with him? No, never deal with a sociopath. I don't know how many times I have to say sociopath in this episode. I think that they, as we said, they run out of ideas in this season. They're recycling plots. They're doing it in a worse fashion. But the biggest problem for me is just how pointless everything is here, because nothing that happens has any bearing on what's going to happen. This is the Raiders of the Lost Ark Indiana Jones argument. You know, you take all this out of the episode and nothing changes. And to me, that's the biggest problem.
Why do they take a call from Philip Bauer? Like when they're like, Mr. President, we've got Philip Bauer on the line. Like, who do they even know who this guy is? Like, I know they say like, oh, wasn't he? Like, they barely had a few lines earlier on in the season about him being something.
Yeah.
But I want them to be like, who's Philip Bauer? Jack's dad? Yeah. Okay.
No. His name is Jack.
Yeah.
It's not Philip. It's Jack. No. The other. No. That one's Graham. No. The other one. The dad. Oh.
Like.
Isn't Josh the dad? No, Josh is the boy that we all want dead. Oh, okay.
Can I call up the White House switchboard and be like, hi, I'm Ben Trump. who are you? I'm Donald's dad.
My name is Noah Bin Laden. Important conversation I need to have with your president.
I'm Colin Hitler. I have some information that may be of use to the United States. Like, I mean, who is he to just call? Like, how does he get the number? Like, don't even get me started on next week about, like, I have access to everything CTU has. And Chloe's like, oh, he's right. God damn it, he's got us. It's just, it is the most lazy possible writing that they just literally do to like go from point A to point B. It is not like, again, we sound like we're joking about they've just given up. They have. Like, they've literally just gone.
Yeah, completely.
Philip Bauer has called the White House and the president's like, he might be evil. And then they just take a call and go along with it.
I just want to add something here because I actually missed something in my notes because I was running out of space. I had to write very small here. Well, we actually have the Suvorov conversation. Another one of these brilliant lines in the episode, we're about to go to war over a piece of circuitry, is a line in this episode.
That's pretty accurate too.
That's Powers Booth being like, is this the best you guys came up with for the third last episode of the season?
Why? Like, we've already questioned Tom being on a sting operation. Why does he then go in the building? He is the chief of staff to the president of the United States. He has no formal interrogation. Like, who is this man? Like, why is he just doing this? Like, I don't know if you've got like you've obviously got a big boss at your company, and I'm sure your boss has an assistant or a secretary or something like that. Like, are they going in to like, oh, an alarm's not going off. Well, I'm going to go in and fix it, sir. Like,
I'm just looking up the current chief of staff for Joe Biden is Jeff Zients.
Now,
I'm sure, you know, big political followers out there are going to be able to recognize it. Can you just imagine you're in the middle of a hotel in the middle of Los Angeles, well, this is Washington, not Los Angeles, in the middle of Washington on the day where nuclear bombs have gone off, and all of a sudden you see Jeff Zients kicking in an open door frame.
You're Jeff Zients.
That's the White House chief of staff. Why is he kicking in an open door frame? Who's that guy choking a woman in there?
And again, this is a day where a nuclear bomb has gone off in the United States. The chief of staff would just go on at, like, this is what, Washington time, like 6 in the morning. Like, I thought you were room service. I want my breakfast. Like, I mean, what is he doing? Like, seriously. I mean, they... Like, they've lost a lot of staff on this day by CTU and the White House and the chief of staff. Didn't David Palmer have, like, fixer-uppers? Who was that? Who was the guy back in season 2?
Oh, yeah, Armus.
Armus. Yeah, like, where's he gone?
Where's Armus?
Where's Armus? Why is the chief of staff having to do stuff? Oh, I don't even know where to begin. Yeah, I'm done with this episode. Can we just finish it?
And by the way, in all this, I forgot to mention that, why would the Russians try to go to war with us? Well, I guess the military is to blame, because now we got to add another layer on top of this, because the writers have written themselves into a corner. Suvorov isn't the type of guy who's going to go to war. What if one of the generals made him do it? Like, it's so lazy and it's so thrown in.
I agree. Yep.
Horrible.
I have nothing to declare.
Trivia for this episode. I love that. It's obviously pointed out that it is clearly not Eric Balfour's body that's being covered up here. I like this one. Nadia says that there was only one casualty, Milo Pressman. Three other guards died during this.
Aw, rip their families. They should be coming back in season 7 as evil, not Tony. I like the real technical ones here about this is the last time we ever see the words counter-terrorist unit in a freeze frame, or the last time which Jack is ever present in CTU Los Angeles. Okay. Cool.
And then Mark Bishop can be seen flinching before he is hit in the head with the bottle by Lisa Miller.
I've got the trivia that I think we will aim to do it between season 6 and 7, because obviously we'll have redemption to do. But between this episode and next week's episode is when they aired the Simpsons parody episode, which has obviously Kiefer and Mary Lynn in it. So I think that, after we've done season 6, before we get to season 7, I think we'll do Redemption, and the Simpsons episode won't take long to do, so I think we should do that.
This is a bin, and
no!
I thought I was being too generous at my ranking of this, because I have it at 138, but then I looked, I'm like, that puts it in the bottom 5 episodes ever, which I currently now have 3 episodes from season 6 in my bottom 5. Only one episode from season 1 and one episode in season 2 actually rank higher than this, or I guess lower than this. So it's my 5th last episode at 138.
Well, last week was the worst episode of all time to this point in 24. This is the 2nd worst episode of all time to this point in 24. So I have this at 141st. 2 weeks in a row they've gone 141st, but this just bumps the other one down a lot lower. It's terrible. But I will say, next week, worse than this one. It might be the most boring episode of 24 ever. Oh, nope.
Which I'm going to disagree. Nope. Yeah, I'm very much going to disagree with you on this one. It is very good for season 6 standards. And to me, I'll get into it more next week. But to me, this is like, I know how good the finale is. And this is a calm before the storm episode where it really gets you excited for when this originally aired, I probably wouldn't have thought much about it. But knowing that this is leading into the finale and some of the little things in this episode that just get me hyped up and excited for the finale. And I kind of like that they're just being a little bit calm and patient with next week's episode and not trying to go all out with all this ridiculousness like we saw in the last couple.
I just love Colin's reaction when he just goes, nope. As soon as I start saying it's bad. Nope.
I'm going to cut you off. You're going too far by criticizing next week.
I'm going to read my synopsis for next week. How can the penultimate episode of a season be so bad and boring? I mean, I guess when you put maybe the two worst characters in the history of 24 in Josh Bauer and Mike Doyle together for the majority of it, that's the result you get. But seriously, how can a show this good have an episode this bad? Ugh, I hate season 6. Seriously, next week is maybe the most boring episode in the history of 24. Colin Hilding, you are wrong.
We haven't done this in a while, but looking at the IMDb rankings, next week is a 7.9, which is level with what this is. Lower than last week's episode. Last week got an 8.1. That's way too generous. Most of season 6 are around the 7.7, 7.8. So, this is higher-ish up for next week's episode, But the finale is obviously going to be the best one. Even the finale only gets an 8.1. People really gave up on this season. That's not kind enough.
Big news next week, of course, is that next week's episode that we will be airing on my birthday. Yay!
Oh.
So it's my birthday next week when we talk about 24. So I'm hosting. So it's all about me next week. You're welcome.
Happy birthday. And happy birthday, Ben. Not Noah, Ben.
Yeah, screw Noah.
So listen to, where are we at right now?
I'm in Australia.
Oh, we're in
Canada.
March. Okay, so there we go. Scott Pilgrim Takes Off is over and done with. We are currently in the middle of Ghostbusters
call?
Month.
Who are you going to call?
And I think at this point, the movie Ghostbusters Afterlife, Frozen Empire, whatever you want to call it, might have even been out already because the release date keeps getting moved.
Yeah, they're moving everything, so we don't know our fucking orders anymore, so whatever. Yep.
Yeah, but we're talking about Ghostbusters. But we're into the latter Ghostbusters movie, so I'm sure that it's just as bad as this episode of 24. We'll have good stuff coming up eventually, don't worry. Like and subscribe and sign up to Patreon, because we're probably talking about Suddenly Susan, which is better than this episode.
It is.
And that is it. My name is Colin, and finally we're done.
And my name is Ben, and finally we're done. Thanks for downloading this episode of the Oz Network. Make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing to the podcast via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or by copying our RSS feed into your preferred podcast provider. And while you're there, please drop us a rating and leave us some feedback. You can also be sure to stay up to date with all the latest episodes and happenings from the show, as well as finding out how you can get involved in upcoming episodes by following our social media pages on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, as well as getting everything you need under one roof at theoznetwork.net. Thanks again for listening, and we'll speak to you next time. Do you like exclusive stuff?
Yes, sir.
Do you like having access to your favorite podcast hosts in a way like never before?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you wish you had access to our old Survivor Oz episodes that you can't find anywhere else online?
Oh, yeah.
If you answered yes to one, two, or all of those questions, then get excited because the Oz Network is now on Patreon. That's right, your favorite podcast has jumped on the Patreon bandwagon to enable a better listening experience for you, our listener. For more details, simply head to www.patreon.com/OzNetwork, where you can sign up for as little as $3 a month. It'll be the best decision you make since that last bad one you made.